Well, good morning, TNC family. On this second Sunday in February, I want to talk with you today from the scriptures about relationships, partly because we are just 2 days away from Valentine's Day, and so it just makes sense, I think, to spend some time thinking through foundational biblical wisdom for relationships, especially since in this window of days and hours, we are bombarded by relationship advice and advertising and noise from all kinds of other sources. And here's the second reason I want to talk about it today. Just a few weeks ago, Robert Waldinger, a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and Mark Schultz, professor of psychology at Bryn Mawr College, released a brand new book called The Good Life: Lessons from the World's Longest Scientific Study of Happiness. It's been all over the news. You probably have seen it. The Wall Street Journal did a great article about it. Multiple news outlets just this week have been interviewing Waldinger. He's been a guest of several of the podcasts I enjoy listening to. The book is based on the most famous and comprehensive study ever done on what enables humans to, quote, live the good life. The study is an 85-year-old study, and it's still ongoing, tracking folks year after year, generation after generation. They follow groups of people, asking them periodically details of their lives: financial, emotional, psychological, physical, getting health data, DNA, brain scans, and so on. And the book begins like this. I'm going to read to you from the very first sentence, page one, sentence one. Quote, "Let's begin with a question. If you had to make one life choice right now to set yourself on the path to future health and happiness, what would it be? Would you choose to put more money into savings each month? To change careers? Would you decide to travel more? What single choice could best ensure that when you reach your final days and look back, you'll feel that you've lived a good life?" And they found in this study, remarkably conclusively, that the most important factor in long-term health and happiness is the quality of one's personal connections. It's a stronger prediction than IQ or career achievement or physical health or financial wealth. They write, quote, "Don't get us wrong. Those things matter, but one thing continuously demonstrates its broad and enduring importance. One crucial factor stands out for the consistency and power of its ties to physical health, mental health, and longevity. And what is it? Good relationships." Which should not be surprising to folks devoted to these scriptures. Proverbs chapter 18, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Proverbs 13, "Walk with the wise and become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm." Proverbs 12, "The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." 1 Corinthians 15, "Don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character." And on and on and on in the scriptures, all the way, of course, to Jesus, who says famously, "Love God with all your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." I've been a pastor now for about 25 years, and I've seen and watched friendships and marriages grow and flourish, or sometimes stagnate and decline. I've met with dozens and dozens and dozens of couples, and it's true from my own observations as well that the Bible is right, and this book, this study is right out of Harvard. If you want to make one decision to ensure your own health and happiness, it should be to cultivate the best relationships of all kinds. And in this book, the study goes on to say that, hey, if you're 30 or 40 or 50 years old, and you're in good, solid relationships, you are the most likely kind of person to be the one who gets to age 80 or 90 in the most physically and mentally sound condition. And then here's the best news of the entire study. It's never too late. It's never too late to get intentional about nurturing good and healthy relationships. So I want to talk now about how to do this. And this is big time going to help anyone who's in a dating or a married relationship now or who wants to be. And I think you'll also see that this is equally huge for relationships in general. So I want now to simply mention three habits or three patterns in the lives of people who have solid, healthy, good relationships. And when you hear these three, I'm sure you'll want to tweak them, or you can add two or three or four more of your own. So this is not an exhaustive list. These are just the three I want to mention today because I think that they will be fresh and super practical and most helpful for us. So here we go. Three habits of folks in healthy and happy relationships. Number one, first habit, first pattern. They are growing. People in healthy and happy relationships are growing personally, intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, learning things, getting better at things, something, anything. And then they're bringing their own personal growth and development into the relationship, which is part of the reason why that relationship has health and vitality. Now, growth is big for a couple of relational reasons. Number one, it's a sign that you are individually healthy. Like, think of a tree or a plant. It's only healthy if it's growing. If new leaves don't come out on the tree, it's not a healthy tree. New shoots, new branches are required. And it's the same with your mind or your body or your soul. If it's stagnating, atrophying, it's not healthy. And if you aren't healthy, your relationships can't be healthy. Now, second, having this growth mindset is great for relationships because if you aren't growing, honestly, you're just boring. Same conversations, same phrases, same attitudes, same perspectives. While the world around you is growing and changing and advancing, you're just, well, the same. And over time, it becomes uninteresting, and it's bad for relationships. So the first habit, the first pattern in the lives of people with healthy and happy relationships is they are growing. Which leads me to another great book published just a few months ago called Don't Trust Your Gut, Using Data to Get What You Really Want in Life, by best-selling author Seth Stevens Davidovitz, a data scientist, lecturer at the Wharton School of Business with a PhD in economics from Harvard. And his book goes through a gamut of topics from parenting to athletics to wealth to health to how to hack luck, great chapter, to a chapter on romance and relationships. Happy Valentine's Day. And in this chapter, he uses the research of Canadian scientist Samantha Joel, who teamed up with 85 scientists, combined data from 43 studies, collected data from 11,000 couples, and they used their state-of-the-art machine learning models to help people pick better romantic partners. And so what they do is they measure age, education, income, race, physical appearance, sexual tastes, hobbies, mental and physical health, politics and religious convictions, moral values, and more. But do you know what accounts for the best relationships? Well, you might now. Do you know what they say is the most likely way to find the best mate and to be the best mate? Answer, quote, someone satisfied with life, secure in who they are, who consistently and conscientiously tries to better themselves, always seeking to learn and grow. Now, think about Tom Brady, just retired from the NFL as the greatest of all time, which means he's been in the news a lot, and players and coaches have been talking about him. And if you've been listening, You've heard people talk a lot about his work ethic and optimism and his competitive drive, but one theme has jumped out to me above all the others in all the interviews I've heard. And I've heard this over and over and over, and it's some version of this. He was a great teammate because he never thought he had it all figured out. He just kept wanting to study and learn and grow and get better and find new angles and edges. And he was a student of the game every day for his entire career. He just kept growing. And so he was great to be around. Reminds me of Elizabeth Gilbert, the journalist and author, who talks about this same character trait in her book called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, in which she says, and this is my paraphrase, but it is what she says, become a person who is curious every day, and you'll never be bored or boring. And then one more example, David Goggins, who's a man with an incredible story, if you know it. He's inspired millions of folks. He's a retired Navy SEAL and the only member of the U.S. Armed Forces to complete SEAL training and Army Ranger School and Air Force Tactical Air Controlling training. After he retired from the service, he became an elite extreme athlete. He's completed more than 70 ultra-distance races. In 2020, he ran a 238-mile race in 62 hours, finished second. He's a former Guinness World Record holder for completing over 4,000 pull-ups in 17 hours. And now he works in his free time in an emergency room part of the year and as a smoke jumper, you know, those guys who are airdropped into the middle of a forest fire, while writing books and traveling the world as a sought-after speaker. And his brand new book just came out. It's called, are you ready for it? Here's the title, Never Finished. Are you 30 years old? You're not finished. Are you 50? Not finished. Are you 80? Not finished. You are never finished. And he says, if you have a never finished mindset, it will lead to growth in every area of your life. I mean, don't tell your spouse, hey, I'm finished finding fresh and new ways to love you. Don't tell your friends, don't tell your mind that you're done giving it new information or learning new hobbies and new things. You are never finished. Keep reading, keep learning, keep repenting, keep listening, keep growing, because that spirit and that attitude and that growth mindset is going to make you a wonderful person to be in a relationship with. And by the way, it is a super great way to experience life with God, too. I mean, I think about when the psalmist writes in chapter 118, this is the day the Lord has made. I will be glad and rejoice in it. The spirit of his counsel is, today, this is a day of adventure and partnership and growth with God. And this day, God is up to something. Up to something in this podcast, in this movie, in this gym I'm training in this conversation I'm having, in this kitchen I'm cooking in this cubicle I'm working in. And so TNC, it's the first habit, the first pattern of folks with healthy and happy relationships. They're growing. Okay, number two, the second pattern or habit of people who have healthy and happy relationships. And remember, that's what we want. It's the one life choice most linked to the good life. Number two, they're paying attention. They're paying attention. So first, they're growing individually. And second, they're paying attention, and specifically paying attention to others, bids for connection. This is a phrase from relationship expert John Gottman, bids for connection. He talks a lot about this, including in his book, The Relationship Cure. I actually have couples read his research on this when I do premarital counseling with them. But Gottman says that if you'll pay attention and really listen, what you'll discover is all the time the other person is putting out bids for your connection. I want to be connected with you, share an experience with you, have our minds sync up for a moment. People make bids for connection all the time, he said. It's why folks say, hey, did you see the game last night? Or, wow, that bird's singing is loud this morning. Or, traffic was really bad today. It's why folks share a video they saw on Instagram or YouTube. It's why folks post and tweet and make observations and share. Now, of course, sometimes people are even more direct in their bid for connection. Hey, can we talk? Can we meet? Can I share something with you? But Gottman says if you'll begin to pay attention, you'll see that bids of connection happen all the time, which gives you the opportunity, if you want to build a good relationship, you'll have a choice how you want to respond. And he says your options are you can turn toward, turn away, or turn against. Turn toward, turn away, which he describes as a neutral response, or turn against. So for example, let's say you're sitting at a dinner table and your spouse sighs. You can turn toward, hey babe, what's going on? Are you okay? So you're indicating interest and attentiveness. Or you can turn away, be more neutral. Just don't respond at all. Just pretend you didn't hear it. Or you can turn against. Okay, what's the problem now? Or one more example, let's say you're at work and somebody comes by your desk and says, hey, do you want some coffee? One response is, I would love some. Or I'll grab some with you. Because the question, do you want some coffee, you understand is more than a scientific question. It's a bid for connection. Or you could say, no thanks, I'm good. That's the neutral response. Or you could say, can't you see I'm busy here? That's turning against. But all the time we are offering bids for connection and we're responding to them. Gottman says that in couples that end up getting divorced, they turn toward only about one third of the time. And in couples who stay together and have strong marriages, they turn toward like over 80% of the time. I listened recently to an interview with Dr. Phil, who told a story about speaking at a law enforcement conference during which a presenter was talking about hostage negotiation. And this presenter was one of the top negotiators for the FBI. And Dr. Phil said that the FBI guy said that they'll never, ever, ever get anyone to release hostages unless and until the hostage taker believes that the negotiator understands why they took those hostages to begin with. Doesn't matter anything else. But once the hostage taker feels like they have been heard, once they feel like the negotiator gets why I took these hostages, then they've got something to work with. Then they have a face-saving way out. I've been heard, I've been seen, and after, there's a connection. And then there's progress. Dr. Phil went on to say that this is true in all relationships, he's discovered. We need to be better active listeners, therefore, he says, quote, I think we need the people we are at odds with and divided with politically, value-wise, culturally. We need to make sure that the person understands, hey, I hear you. I'm not telling you I agree with you, but I have taken the time to really hear and really understand you. Many times people are frustrated because they just don't feel heard. And then he goes on in this interview and says that in most conflict in marriages, what is most needed is not for one person to win as much as just to be heard. Because just being heard relieves the tension. And so we need to do less talking and more listening. As James, the brother of Jesus, writes in the New Testament, in his letter, chapter 1, verse 19, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And so this is the second habit, the second pattern of folks with healthy and happy relationships, which is what we want. They're paying attention to bids for connection. They're really listening. By the way, God sends you and me invitations to connect every day too. He sends bids for our connection. The Apostle Paul makes this point, Acts chapter 17. You can read the whole story later, but he says here that God created you and me and gives us life and breath and all things to everyone. Verse 27, and the aim was that they would search for God and perhaps reach out to him and find him, for he is actually not far from each one of us. God makes bids for our connection too. Which leads to number three, the third pattern or habit of folks who have healthy and happy relationships. And remember, that's what we want. It's the one life choice most linked to the good life. Number three, they're forgiving. They regularly overlook faults. Again, listen to some scripture, Proverbs chapter 17. Overlook an offense and bond a friendship. Fasten on to a slight and goodbye, friend. Proverbs chapter 19. Sensible people control their temper. They earn respect by overlooking wrongs. And we need this counsel in our culture, in a culture where everyone, it seems, is at risk of having to spend the rest of their lives living with their worst picture, worst joke, worst action, worst mistake. A world in which one of the greatest tactics of the power hungry is to stand in judgment over and call out another's faults and potentially ruin the life of another human being for reasons which may or may not be sincere. And sometimes we say, sure, let's forgive. But then we end up forgiving only the people we like or the person whose tribe or views most closely fit our own. So if you like her, you'll forgive her, and if you don't like her, you won't. But Jesus says, Matthew chapter 7, we must become forgivers. So stop judging. Take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to help take the speck out of your friend's eye. Jesus also said, when asked how often we ought to forgive, he said, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. Jesus also said, if you've been forgiven much, how much more ought you to forgive those who offend you? And of course, Jesus was the greatest forgiver of all time. And people love to be around him and to be in relationship with him. Because that's the way to bond a friendship. Because forgiveness, it'll lift your own spirit and the spirits of those around you. Forgiveness will increase the respect and intimacy in your relationships. And so it's the third pattern of folks who have healthy and happy relationships. And that's what we want. It's the one life choice most linked to the good life. So let me end where I started, page one, sentence one of this brand new book study. Quote, if you had to make one life choice right now to set yourself on the path to future health and happiness, what would it be? Would you choose to put more money into a savings account each month? Change careers? Would you decide to travel more? What single choice would best ensure that when you reach your final days and look back, you'll feel that you've lived the good life? Answer: good relationships, healthy and happy relationships. It's the one choice we must make. And we must pursue. So let's keep growing individually. Let's keep paying attention to others and their bids for connection. And let's keep on forgiving others as God in Christ Jesus has forgiven us. Will you pray with me? God, I pray now for every person listening. I pray for their relationships, for relationships they are in and for relationships they want to be in. For relationships with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a spouse, parent, a child, grandparent, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, friends. And God, I pray that we would all lean into your bids of connection with us, and that as we lean into your love and your wisdom, we would find increasing depths of love and wisdom and joy in all of our relationships. And so we submit ourselves to you to that end. Now, TNC, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we could ask or imagine, to him be glory in our church and in our lives and in our relationships through Jesus Christ, throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen.